I'm going to read it to you. And it says, I had a lot of small victories, but it wasn't until I showed up as me completely that my world began to change. That's never changed for me. And I think I talked about this a lot today. Showing up for yourself is so important. If you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. When you decide to show up for you, when you decide to believe in you and support you and be your biggest advocate, that is when your blessings will come. That is when you'll start to win. But if you're not going to do it for yourself, nobody else is going to get on board with you. If I don't see you believing in yourself, having confidence in yourself, advocating for yourself, then why would I do it? I think people that are successful are their biggest fans, not in an unhealthy or arrogant way, but in a way of, I got me and I know I'll do whatever it takes to make a way. I believe in me. I'm doing this for my family, for my friends, for the next person that looks like me, but I got to show up for me first.
Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question. Simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community.
Shelby Morgan is a force for good. Good purpose, good energy, good vibes, and good financial literacy. For several years, Shelby worked in corporate marketing and social media, with her last corporate role in human resources at TikTok. In late 2024, Shelby bet on herself and pursued her passion project full-time when she shifted all her energy and talent into the Hustle, Budget, and Glow podcast. Her mission is to advocate for financial wellness and mental resilience, helping listeners hustle smarter and live boldly. She applies her Texas Women's University MBA to sit down one-on-one with entrepreneurs who are building businesses, breaking barriers, and redefining success on their own terms, listening to their journeys, lessons learned, and unfiltered advice to inspire action. We met in our first moments of a recent podcast conference and immediately clicked. I've been looking forward to sharing her perspectives and insights with this community ever since that initial connection. Shelby, welcome to Curated Questions.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate you having me.
I always like to start with the same question, and that is, when did you first understand the power of questions?
From what I can remember, probably when I was 4 or 5. I grew up in like a really strategic household. My parents gave me free will and they always gave me an opportunity to make decisions. They would typically give me like 2 or 3 things to pick from, whether it was what I wanted to color, what I wanted to eat, what I wanted to wear. And they would ask me questions, like simple things. And I'd make my mind up pretty much within the first 1 to 2 minutes. So that's my real first memory of my experience with questions.
When we had met during a conference, you had talked a little bit about your parents. But it seems as though they've had a remarkably positive influence on you. And so I want to be able to dive a little bit into that. So maybe if we take that through the lens of questions, what did that look like as far as your parents encouraging you on in questions?
It was pretty simple. My dad is ex-military and he's really strategic and he believes in people having freedom and options to make their own choices. It was really easy from the moment I started my day. I always had to lay out my clothes before I went to school the night before. So it was always like, Shelby, what do you want to wear today? Up until I was probably like 8 when I could decide what I wanted to wear. And I went to private school, so it wasn't that hard. Like, I mean, we had 4 or 5 shirt colors we could pick out, but that was exciting for me. And we could wear like 3 different color socks, then I could do like shorts or a skirt or pants. So it was fun to switch it up and we could wear whatever shoes we wanted. So that was always the first question, you know, Shelby, what do you want to wear to school tomorrow? The next question was, what do you want for breakfast in the morning? And what should I pack for your lunch? I didn't start packing my own lunch and picking out my own clothes until, like I said, I was probably like 8 or 9. And that's when things changed. And I just started asking myself what I wanted. And obviously my parents were still buying the groceries to put in the lunchbox. It was very simple and it flowed. And I just feel like that was how things were built for me to help me, number one, lean in onto my own decisions. And number two, to build a rapport of developing relationships when I'm talking to people. Because I met a lot of kids growing up that were a lot more shyer than me, that didn't speak up for what they wanted, whether it was what they were going to pick in the lunch line or what they wanted to play with at their desk. I I just could pick up on cues. I'm really intuitive. I can pick up that they weren't as extroverted and outspoken as me. And I think that has a lot to do with, again, my parents giving me a lot of choices and options growing up. And if there was something I was interested in, there was no space that I couldn't be in. My parents always taught me that any space you want to be in, go put yourself in it. And if it's something you don't like, pivot and go do a different activity. I did ballet for a couple of years. I remember crying on the stage and like leaving the stage. I told my mom, like, I don't want to do this anymore. And she asked me why. And we talked about it. And I gave her my why. And I was like, okay, when the recital's over, we can wrap up. You don't ever got to come back. And I never went back. And that was it. They really respected my opinion. I just didn't enjoy it. I felt like it was super political, even as a little kid. And any ballerina could tell you that there is politics and stuff behind that career and just pressure. And I didn't want that. I was more of a sports person. So I chose my other activities over ballet. I wanted to put more time into softball. So yeah, just discussions. Until this day, my parents respect my opinion. We have conversations. It's not a panel that I have to present to. It's not one way or their way. I'm the only child. Maybe people that have more kids don't have the energy or time to sit there and have in-depth conversations, but my parents definitely made the time to do that. So I'm really big on creating spaces for people to feel comfortable in my home when it comes to my friends or when I meet people at events, like how I meet you. I want to make sure I'm listening and I'm intentional on giving time for you to talk, following up. All those things steer from like my upbringing and my parents pushing social cues and building a rapport with people. And it matters to me. It brings me joy to meet new people and be around them and learn about them. So that's really how my upbringing like kind of came together for now for me as an adult.
Gotcha. At the time, was there a rule of, okay, you're going to be doing something? So whether it was sports or was that all on you pushing, oh, I want to try these different things? What was the source of that?
Yeah, it was both. My parents never let me be idle. They're really big on having like a diverse skill sets and being proactive. My mom would introduce me to different things. We have a conversation about what I wanted to do. And I tried a bunch of activities. I'm super creative. So anything that was creative or technical or people oriented, I typically wanted to do it. And I love to learn. And I ended up doing this for years. It was volunteering at the library. One of my fun facts is I know the Dewey Decimal System, like the back of my hand. I volunteered at the library from second grade up until my last week of high school. My mom told me you have to know what it's like to give back to other people and help them. You can't live in our house and not volunteer and help people and give back to your community. So it wasn't an option. And I worked at the front desk at the library and they had to get me a stool. I would check people out. So I was pretty short for a second grader. If your books were late, you didn't want to come talk to me. I was going to find you. And I also ran like the volunteer reading program as I got older, working with younger kids, teaching them how to read. I did a lot at the library. And so funny enough, my mom literally messaged me this week. She sent me a link. She was like, have you been to the Austin Public Library? The one like downtown by your house? And I said, oh no, I've never been there. She was like, you should go. It looks really cool. You should get a library card. They have a lot of free events. You can go volunteer. That's really important to her. And so when I left high school and I went to college, my mom was like, you have to find something to do to volunteer while you're at school. She was like, you can't just go to school and have fun and do whatever you want. She was like, you have to give back. So in college, I chose volunteering at the food bank. And I did that until I finished undergrad. Even in grad school, I became like an Apple Corp team leader at the Houston Food Bank. And I volunteered until I finished undergrad and grad school. So it was very important. So my mom, we had conversations about why it was important. It didn't really matter what I picked. It just had to be impactful. And that wasn't it. Like for Christmas, for Thanksgiving, we were helping give out meals. We would get up really early in the morning before we opened gifts or before we like had our dinner for Thanksgiving. We would go volunteer to hand out meals and like gifts to people. It didn't matter. Like we always volunteered. So it wasn't an option, but it was a conversation about like what you wanted to do and how you wanted to give back. And I never asked a question about it. I thought it was really important. I understood the concept of everyone doesn't have the same lifestyle. Everyone doesn't have the same resources. Everyone doesn't have the same opportunity that I do as a kid. I was thankful to be privileged. And my mom was like, you know, not everybody has that, Shelby. So you have to help these other people however you can, because your job when you have more than other people is to help them get to the next level. That was a conversation we had not often, because I understood the first like one or two times my parents told me. When it came to sports, I always loved baseball. I'm a huge Astros fan. We went to baseball games growing up and it was just fun to me. I never liked football. I played basketball too, but I really stuck with softball. I tried every activity, any sport you could think of. I did volleyball, everything, but I really stuck with softball. It was like my number one thing that I did for years. And I think it's helped me a lot today in like playing pickleball. Sometimes I hit the ball too hard when I'm on the pickleball court, but we had conversations and my parents, every summer I was in some type of summer camp club activity up until I graduated from high school. Like literally the last summer I had off before my senior year, I went to engineering camp. The summer before that, it was architect camp. I would go stay at a university for like a week, 2 weeks. It wasn't an option. Even when I graduated from college, I was like, oh, great. No summer camp, no volunteering. I can't wait. Literally, I graduated on a Saturday. Sunday night, my mom handed me a portable fan, a new Nike backpack, a new lunchbox. I was like, what is this? She handed me a campus map for the University of Houston. I was like, what is this for? School doesn't start until August. She was like, yeah, little did you know, you won't be sitting around the house doing nothing all summer, having a blast splashing at the pool every day. I actually signed you up for early enrollment at the university. You start college courses Monday, 8 a.m. He was like, you're in a STEM program for STEM majors. And I was like, what? She was like, yeah, have fun. You're taking calculus and chemistry for engineers. At that point, I was an electrical engineering major. And I'm like, what? She was like, yeah. She was like, here's your map. Here's your parking pass. She was like, have a blast. It's going to be hot. I got you a portable fan. There was no days off. I didn't understand why my parents were so on top of me for education and, you know, moving upward in my life with so many other things, so many other ways. I didn't get it at first. I was like, I just want to have the summer off. But I get it now as an adult, and none of their hard work and effort went to the wayside. But like I said, I really never questioned my parents. They're not people you question. If they ask you to do something, you do it. Like, it's not something I would do. If my mom and dad asked me to do something right now today, I would happily do it without question. We can have a conversation about how I might feel about it. But at the end of the day, I'm going to do it.
Wow.
I rose for duty every morning.
Yeah. See, the beauty is that now you're probably going to get retirement from the military just by virtue of having the parents. Although you never served, you did the time.
I did the time. But yeah, the military paid for me to go to school. So I definitely got a benefit from it.
There's a perk. Yeah.
It was a perk. Yeah. Very thankful. Both degrees, especially with all this noise that I've been hearing lately about people are going to unfortunately have to start paying back their student loans that were defaulted. I'm glad it's not something I have to deal with. So I thank my parents and the military for that, for sure. I'm very appreciative.
Now, how do you think volunteerism has shaped how you're living life today?
You know what? I have a very free spirit, chill lifestyle. I have a very soft life. And I know people say that all the time now on social media, but I think soft life depends on who you are, the person, and what it means to you. Soft life to me means slow mornings. I mean, starting my day how I want, ending my day how I want, having access to my health and ways that I want, whether that's going to the gym at 12 or going to the gym at 3:30 or being able to meal prep my vegan lunch, like whatever I want to do. So for me, like, I get to volunteer how I want and show up for myself. So I think that's really had an impact on my life and how I see things and how I move forward and how I do my day to day. I'm very thankful to have such a relaxed, laid back life and not have to worry so much about things. I'm just really appreciative. So I volunteer in those ways so I can make sure that I'm good throughout the week. Because for me, I'm really big on mental health and physical health. So I feel like I volunteer my time into what I'm buying at the grocery store, how I'm planning out what my meals are, the workouts I'm going to do, the kindness that I'm going to give to a stranger that I see on the elevator. So I volunteer things to do for myself to impact my overall well-being and that of others that I'm around, because I think it all boils down to energy. Like what you volunteer your time to comes back to you in negative or positive energy. And I feel like you give that off too. I feel like that's how it really impacted me. As far as do I still volunteer and do things from a nonprofit standard? Yeah. And I do it typically in ways of fitness and wellness. Like if there's a 5K that's for a cause, a biking event for a cause, I'm going to go do it. Like I just did a 5K for Head for the Cure for brain cancer. I donated, I made a team. I try to run a faster time just in honor of those that have to deal with these health issues or have lost somebody from brain cancer. So I volunteer in different ways now, but it's still really core to who I am and to my heart. But I really feel like I'm going to have to take my mother up on that library visit. So I definitely will be going next week. From a ideation standpoint, it's made me a very kind person. I think it's not hard to be kind. And I think a lot of people should practice it more. I think people have lost aspects of kindness, especially with the pandemic. I think people didn't have to talk to people as much. They were at their home for a year and a half and they didn't have to interact. And what I missed the most when the world was shut down was people's smiles and just speaking to strangers, asking them how they were doing. So being in situations that I didn't get paid to do, and I was there by choice, I just learned to be a kind person, to be a genuine person. It doesn't matter to me who you are, where you went to school, where you work, what you believe in. I should be nice to you regardless. If I can build a conversation with you, I will. I volunteer my time a lot. That's why I say I volunteer my energy a lot to strangers, because a conversation could change my life. It could change their lives. So
absolutely.
It made me kind. Volunteering made me kind. Volunteering made me patient. It made me very laid back. Not too many things bother me. I'm not confrontational. I don't like to argue. I'm so quick to just be like, oh, okay, no big deal. Like, I'm literally just going to go about my day. So I just don't view things in such a negative light. I don't believe in giving everything so much air that other people probably would. Some things are what they are, and I fight the fights that I can in a positive way. But yeah, volunteering did a lot for me, because at the end of the day, we're all kind of volunteering to be here, right? Mm-hmm. Like for a short time, not a long time. So make the best out of it. That's what I try to do.
There you go. So the kindness element, what might be some questions that might encourage kindness, or you think might have informed how you exercise kindness in the world? Anything resonate there at all?
I really think it was just like when I would finish up at any volunteer event or gig that I had, my parents would just always ask me, what did you get out of it? Did you enjoy it? Did you have a good time? Would you do it again? And I was always really honest, but I love talking about my experience. To be at the library, it was pretty much always the same, right? Like I did a lot of the same tasks. I would be like, oh, it was super busy today. I want to lean toward more of doing that and not so much putting the books on the shelves and organizing them with the Dewey Decimal System. But was there a lot of follow-up? Especially like for the Thanksgiving and Christmas food drives that we would do, we would engage with these people. We would have conversations, and my mom would be like, you know what, Shelby, this person might be going through that now, but you don't know where their life is going to take them in the next 4 or 5, 10 years. So I'll always tell people, always be willing to show up for people, even when they're in a tough spot, and have empathy. So it was really just conversations around kindness and what I thought, what my feelings were, how it impacted me, how I felt. Sometimes I would feel like, I wish we could have did more. I wish that we weren't just here today, like giving them food and giving out toys. Like, what are the next steps for these people that are less fortunate? Like, how are other people going to show up for them in their lives beyond today? So my worry was always, it's not enough. Like, they're still going to need help. When I was volunteering at the food bank, and I was in undergrad or grad school, and one of the setups at the food bank, it was like a shop. You could come in there and shop, and you could get like toothbrushes, food, whatever you needed. And I remember we had got a donation. I don't know from what grocery chain it was, but it was a whole bunch of like Marvel movie toothbrushes. And the movie was over. They didn't need them anymore. They donated them to us. So we did a backpack drive for back to school, and we put toothbrushes in all the backpacks. And time went on, and we ended up getting like thank you letters like sent to us. And we read some of them. And I never forgot like this one kid. He was like, thank you guys so much. For the first time in my life, I don't have to share a toothbrush with my siblings. And that's not something people think about. I have like 2 or 3. I just threw away one of my electric toothbrushes. The battery, it wasn't zooming the same. And I love a white, bright smile. So I was like, oh yeah, I didn't want to buy a new battery. I threw it in the trash. But he was so thankful for that. So I guess my question was always like, wow, like, what else can we do next? Like, that impacted his life that much. What else can we do to help this person? So I really say that was pretty much it. Like, I always had some lingering of a sadness, to say the least, to a certain effect when it came to volunteering in those aspects. Not the library. I mean, I didn't feel any sadness volunteering at the library. I just more so wanted to wash all the dust off my hands from the books. And I remember I would have to take the library cards. Back then, they were stamping cards. You got to have the card in the back of the book. Like, times have changed so much. I don't even know how library cards look. They're probably on your phone or your Apple Wallet. I'll find out when I go.
Yeah.
I've done it. My mom's not going to let it go. I'm going to have to go. But yeah, no, I always just wonder, what more could you do for people? How more could you help them, and in which way? Because if you are in these situations where I'm volunteering at, that's not your last stop. You need more than that, obviously. I understand now as an adult, real life, and why people end up in those situations. And it's very unfortunate. But as a kid, I was just like, why do they have to live like this? What can we do? Why aren't people helping them? Like, somebody do something. You know, when you're a little kid, like, it doesn't make sense to you so much of how the world works and just how things are.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I've grown up and I still don't understand why the world works the way that it works. Man,
you know,
how does curiosity work into your life, whether it's strangers, with your podcast? How does that show up for you?
Yeah, I'm never not curious. One of my like traits is learner. I did this, I don't know if it was Myers-Briggs, I printed out my top traits, and learner was one of them. I love to learn. Like, I would be a forever college student if it made sense. I would have 30 degrees. I love reading. I love learning. I'm just really curious about things and how the world works. I love history. I'm always curious about something. Like, my dad said I would make a great attorney because he said, I'm such a detective. He said, I will figure something out. I will interview. I will investigate. I will ask all the right questions. He said, you're not getting past me because I'm going to make sure that I'm going to know exactly every single detail, every fine line detail of what is and what isn't. And I'm going to get it done. So yeah, like, I've always been a curious kid. I've always been someone that fights for what is right. And I'm able to do that because I know the facts. Like, there's something going on and I'm involved in it. And you try to spin on me, it's more than likely not going to happen because I've already looked up all the facts and I know what the exact answers are. Like, it's not going to be subjective. I'm going to definitely lay it down for you. I think I just find things interesting. I find a variety of things fascinating and I always want to learn more if I can. I have so many different interests. I have so many different hobbies. I've monetized some of my passions, but I'm always wanting to learn more and figure out the what, the why, the who, the where. It just brings me joy. And I think it's one of the reasons I love playing video games. Like, I love gaming and I'm not an amazing gamer. I might have to go through a level 4 times sometimes to get past it, but I'm just curious about what's next. I have 3 PlayStations and a PlayStation Portable. Like, I love video games.
Wow.
My mom just asked me like 2 days ago, when's the last time you played your game? And I said, I played it last week, like an hour and a half. I got back on my Harry Potter game. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. I like gaming because it takes my mind away from everything that's going on around me, the outside world, the present world. And it's fun. It's amazing. I'm just trying to figure out what's next. It's an adventure. Yeah. And it sparks my curiosity and my interest. So I think my curiosity and my intuition, like, I often have an idea of how someone is or what's going to happen before it even does. And I think that's why I keep playing the games. Like, I kind of know what the next level is going to be, but at the same time, I'm curious to see how it turns out. So yeah, curiosity has helped me in a lot of ways. It's helped me be creative. It's helped me meet people. It's helped me make friends really easily. I could live anywhere. I can live in Bangladesh. I could live in Anchorage, Alaska. I can live anywhere in the world and I would never be lonely. Because I'm going to always be curious about people's culture. I'm going to always be curious about people's personalities. I'm going to always be curious about getting to know them. I'm never worried about not being curious or not always wanting to find out more. So that's my hot take.
Nice. Nice. Well, it seems to have carried you along in a lot of the different ventures that you've been up to and things that you're working on. So
It makes meeting people easy. It really does. I love that I can travel somewhere and be like, oh, I'm going to hit up so-and-so when I get there. Just by being curious and saying hi to somebody and how they're going to react. It's fun. I can go to a different city or a different country and I might know somebody there. It's a good feeling to have. So I think my curiosity has made me personable for sure. And really easy to get along with.
Certainly your curiosity, I saw it in action at the conference where you're full on engaging with anyone and everyone. That was fun to be able to see.
Yeah. My parents always taught me to talk to everybody. Like, why not? And sometimes people really need a conversation, especially when I notice someone who I can read people that are introverted or more ambiverted really easily. They're typically off in the corner or to themselves. They're not in the middle of the room. And so those people I always try to communicate with because they're normally great conversationalists. They just need an opportunity to be one-on-one. So yeah, it helps me reach out and talk to people who probably wouldn't have the opportunity to talk as much if someone didn't give them the chance. It's been helpful. It's been good.
Yeah. Cool. Let's talk a little bit about the podcast, Hustle, Budget, and Glow. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you're seeking to accomplish through those conversations and the guests that you're bringing on?
Yeah, let's talk about it. So Hustle, Budget, and Glow for me is themed around my love for money mindset, financial wellness, having security in your finances, being able to make your money work for you, not you work for your money. And also my deep interest in curiosity in the finance industry. Like, I love watching CNBC in the morning. Like, I love watching Bloomberg, learning about what's going on in business. Like, I'm subscribed to a lot of the CNBC newsletter. The one guy, Jim Cramer, he sends out a report like every Tuesday. Yep. I'm fascinated. I think it's really cool. Growing up as a kid, like, my grandfather and grandma read the newspaper. And I love looking at the stock section, the financial reporting section of the news. I like numbers. I like math. I don't like calculus or geometry, but I like numbers and just putting things together and what it could do for you. I grew up in a household where money and money management was mentioned from a very young age. It fascinated me. My great grandparents never gave me toys as gifts. They gave me savings bonds. They gave me toys to invest in my future. They didn't buy Barbie dolls and stuff like that. That didn't happen. They gave me savings bonds. And my parents never allowed me to use them and cash them out until I went to college, so I was an adult. I got a savings account when I think I was in, I don't know, first or second grade. I had a debit card when I was like 9 or 10. My dad was talking about money market accounts very young. Him and my grandfather owned real estate. They owned property. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. He owned a flea market and like a resale shop, like your current thrift shop, but he resold all kinds of things. Anything you can really think of. He had a barbecue food truck. He was really entrepreneurial. He was really smart and amazing. And wish I could have got to know him as an adult, like later on in my life. But yeah, he had a very interesting childhood. And he would tell me stories like, Shelby, you can make it anywhere you want. Just know how to sell yourself. Know how to sell yourself and know how to sell. If you learn how to sell something and you know how to sell yourself, you can make it. And my grandfather had a third grade education. He grew up in Crowley, Louisiana as a sharecropper picking sugarcane on a plantation. He had to quit school when he was 8 because they couldn't afford to eat or like feed his siblings. So he had a very hard life until he left Crowley. He moved to Texas and he like made a way. So if anyone can make it, my grandfather said, if I can make it, you can definitely make it. Like you don't have to have those obstacles. I always was like, okay, like sell yourself, money management, entrepreneurship. Like I was always very fascinated by it. To college when I was like an engineering major, I was like, this is not working for me. I like business. I like people. I'm like, I like making something out of nothing. I probably made my first side hustle when I was, I think my first side hustle, I had to be between 20 and 22. I can't remember exactly. I started doing like my own career consulting, like helping people with resumes, et cetera. Cause I worked, my student job was at Career Services. And I started doing it on my own to help people. Cause I realized I had like a method behind the madness to relate to younger people better than what I saw the career counselors doing. And I never forget my job. They told me I couldn't work there and do my side hustle. And so I quit. I said, I don't want to work here anymore. I can't do it. This is not a conflict of interest because I'm doing something very different than what y'all are doing. Like my assigned tasks at work are not related to what I'm doing. I'm just using what I learned to help students. And I'm getting paid for it. Like y'all are paying $10 an hour. I'm getting paid more by them. So I quit and I didn't care. I have that kind of personality. You don't want to work with me. You don't want to see me shine. You can go. I'm not going to think much about it. And I just kept learning, kept growing. I went and got my MBA because I wanted to learn how to be a better business owner, a better entrepreneur. I never went. I wanted to be a director, leader, talk to Tom and Sarah at work and the CEO room. I don't care about that. That means nothing to me. Like if I don't own it, if my name's not on it, you can have it. I'm always going to be a A-minus worker, A-minus, B-plus corporate professional. I'm never going to be A-plus because it's not mine. And you're never going to get ownership of a company because you broke your back and went above and beyond. As someone who's worked in corporate America long enough and worked in HR, good luck. You're better off putting your A-plus work into your own endeavors. I always made sure I did enough to get my work done, be collaborative, and get my bonus. I did not and will not ever do more than that. I'm kind, I'm hardworking, but I'm not getting there early. I'm not staying late. I'd rather put my time into my own ventures. And I started thinking about who I was, how my personality was, my side hustles and money and what all that meant to me and how I wanted to leverage that in my life and how if I started at a young age, if something was ever to happen, if I was ever to lose my job or anything like that, I would always be good. I would never have to struggle or feel like I had nowhere to go. I mean, I can just go back home upstairs to my parents' house, but I'm very independent. And so I just started studying outside of my MBA program. I started looking more into how to monetize your creative passions. And I started my vegan bakery business before I started the podcast 5 years ago. And when I started podcasting 3 years ago, it was to tell people how to monetize their bakery business, their bakery talents, any food cooking talent you have. But I realized what I was really talking about was having a business mindset, showing up for yourself, interacting with other people who were doing as good as you or better than you to help you learn and be a better business owner, money management, how to budget, how to think outside of your 9-to-5, how to be the entrepreneur that you want to be, not the entrepreneur the world tells you to be, how to learn from other entrepreneurs that are already doing what you're doing or something similar to you, what you want to do, asking the right questions in the right spaces, going out and networking and making those conversations happen to create and curate your business model. In a nutshell, I was talking about all those things. So financial tips, mindset, side hustles, and engaging with others to make that happen. So I said, you know what? I'm changing the theme of the podcast. Like, I'm not talking about baking at all. I'm like, forget that. I'm talking about the grind. I'm talking about managing your money, the budgeting part, and the glow, the shine that comes with it. If you hustle the right way, if you manage your money the right way. So I interview entrepreneurs on my show. You're right about that. People from all different backgrounds. I never ask anybody where they went to school, what they majored in, where they work at. That doesn't matter to me. If you're successful, if you're a business owner, then you're successful. And if you want to share that information, you can share it. And I want people to learn that I don't care what your talent is. I don't care if you have a sock company where you make custom socks. I don't care if you sell banana bread. I don't care if you're a DJ. I don't care if you have a CPA company. If you have something that you're good at and you're passionate about, talent and passion, you can make money. If you don't have talent and passion, then the podcast probably isn't for you. You gotta figure that out first. And so I really try to motivate people to dig deep in their passions and their talents. I think everybody has a talent they can make money off of. I don't think everybody has passion and grit, but you can if you want. And if you listen to the show, I encourage you, I give you tips and tricks and share resources and stats on how you can develop that passion part, how you can develop that grit, because you already have a gift. You just got to have the other parts to make it work. And then once you make your first dollar, like what to do next, getting that sole proprietorship, getting that LLC, learning from the entrepreneurs on my show, learning how to manage your money. I don't care if you save 5% of your income every month, invest and save something. Don't just not do it. We live in a world that's too dangerous for you to play with your cost of living. I don't advise it. And I also talk a lot about corporate America because I think you have to know what it's like to work for somebody else before you can go work for yourself. It's really hard unless you're like a Steve Jobs in your garage for you to just be like, oh, I'm just going to be an entrepreneur from jump, right? There are people that are like that, but I do advise people, get some experience, learn how to work with people who don't think like you, that don't act like you, that are not you. Because you're going to have to deal with people as a business owner. You don't have to like anybody, but you do have to respect people and know how to collaborate. So go learn and do that. If that's corporate America, if you don't like your 9-to-5, that's okay. Learn from it. Put aside some money from it, invest it in your business and look for another way. Get another job, something else you like. But everything you take from those jobs, from those internships, apprenticeships, whatever your money-making job is, put it into your business. Learn, invest. Take your time to stop and ask questions. And I talk about all that in my show because I think it's important. I think hustle is seasonal. I don't want people to have to hustle the rest of their lives. But you got to hustle the right way at the right time. And you have to learn how to communicate effectively. You have to learn how to save effectively. A lot of people don't know where to start. They don't want to look at their money. They don't know what's coming in. They don't know what's going out. They don't know what their monthly bills are. They don't know what the costs of their individual bills are. People don't know what trends are going on in the world and how business decisions and political decisions are affecting their money. They don't even want to watch. They don't even want to look. So I talk about all these things in a nutshell on my show, just to help people show up better for their self and for their money. At the end of the day, I'm just a girl from Houston that likes talking about money and mindset. And I want everyone to show up better for their money and make it work for them and show up for their self. The mental part is just show up for yourself. People lack confidence in their self and their abilities nowadays. And I don't know why that is, but I want people to lean more into who they are, into their gifts, into their talents, and use that to make some income and make some money for yourself and your family and the next generations to come. That's what really matters to me. If I can help one or two people do that over the next course of the 20 years podcasting, then I've done my job. I'm your wealth wellness advocate. I'm your financial friend. I'm just Shelby from Houston. That is it.
Beautiful. You mentioned passion.
Can you learn passion? Yes, you can be around passionate people. You can read books about passion and having a great mindset and cultivating the life you want. You can read your favorite self-help book if you want to do that. You can be friends with the nicest, most successful, passionate entrepreneur. But if you don't want it, then you're not going to have it. Passion is within you. So if you want it to come out, you want it to break free, you want to live in that passion, entrepreneurs are obsessed. They're obsessed with their passion. So if you're going to be an entrepreneur, if you want to make it, you have to have that passion. Being around somebody, reading a book about it, if you're not going to activate it, if you don't actually want it, you're not going to dig for it and work for it, it's not going to happen. Now, grit is different, right? I think grit can be learned, but grit can't be kept. It just can't. If you want to grind, if you want to get out there and you want to make something shake, then that's who you are. I think it's in you. You can learn grit, but I think grit can't be kept if you're not going to work at it. That's for sure.
What questions about money are not asked often enough?
I think people should ask themselves, number one, what am I spending on that I'm not using? I think people spend money all the time on things that they're not even utilizing. Number one are subscriptions. People love a subscription. There are people that have gym memberships that haven't been in 3 years and they're not going. One of the hardest gym memberships to cancel is from Planet Fitness. It used to be $10. I think it's way more now. I've had my Planet Fitness membership for probably over a decade. I think I'll have to go to headquarters to cancel it. When's the last time I've been? Last time I went to Planet Fitness was when I went home in April for the conference. I keep my membership because I like being able to always have a gym to work out at when I travel, and it's so cheap, so I never let it go. So I'm utilizing it. I just prefer using my at-home gym in my apartment, but I keep it for convenience for when I travel. But there are people that have gym memberships that have Stars, that have Disney Plus. They're not using it. They're not using the subscription at all. So number one question, what are you spending your money on that you're not using? Go and look at your subscriptions. Because I promise you, there's one or two that you have not utilized properly in the past 6 to 12 months. So stop giving your money away. And also re-look at your subscription packages when you're asking yourself that question. Because I just realized that I was paying, $17 a month for Hulu Premium and $20 for Disney Premium. And Hulu and Disney have combined. Now I only pay, $24 for both of them. In my mind, it was just so automated. I didn't even think to be like, let me cancel once while I'm saving money. I can save almost $150-something. I can't do the math right now. That was my bad for doing that. That was a month ago. I canceled Stars. I only had Stars so my mom could watch one of her shows. The show doesn't even come on anymore. And I'm like, who's using Stars? Those were all channels back in the day you had on cable at your house. You had the ultimate plan. We had every channel. I loved it. I'm not looking at any shows on Stars. So I canceled Stars. I let it go. I canceled LinkedIn Premium. I was wasting my money. I had my LinkedIn Premium account for years. And I'm like, I'm not using LinkedIn Premium. I don't care who's looking at my profile. Have a blast. Look at it. So ask yourself what you're spending money on that you're not using. Number one question, get your money back into your account, into your hands. If there's money you could be saving, I promise you the first thing you should look at is what you're spending on that you're not using. Next up is know what you're spending each month and know what your bills are. What are my bills? What am I spending each month? All my bills. Because a lot of times you might have to call the car insurance and shop around and get something that's cheaper for yourself. You don't have to have the same plan you've had for 7 or 8 years at State Farm. Know what your bills are. Know what you're spending. Know what you're able to save. Know what you can allocate toward investing and saving. Ask yourself that. How much money do I have every 2 weeks, every month, every week, whatever your payment plan is at your job? What do I have left to allocate at the end of each week, end of each month? And what can I do with those funds? And I think if people started knowing what they're wasting money on, that they're not using, what their bills are, what they're spending, what they could be saving and investing on, I think if they ask themselves those 5 questions, it would be a lot better off. And lastly, ask yourself, why do I want to save and invest this money? What is the reason? Mm-hmm. What do I have a use for it? For me, why I want to save money and invest money in a portfolio is for emergency funds. We live in a world where the economy, cost of living is always changing. You don't want to be caught up. So you should always have an emergency fund. You should always be building up your emergency fund. That way you're never caught in a situation where you feel stuck. Number two is for business ventures. I'm an entrepreneur. I believe in investing in the things that matter to me. With strategy. I'm not just going to invest in something for the hell of it. I'm more of a medium risk type of entrepreneur, medium risk financial portfolio investor, looking at things. I measure the pros and cons. You should definitely be thinking about that as well. And lastly, what would I say? Emergency funds, business ventures, and next up would probably be real estate. Honestly, I think there's power in property, whether that's something you want to live in or something you want to flip. Those are my top three for sure. Real estate, emergency funds, and business ventures. That way you always have an out. You can't rely on somebody else to pay your bills and fund your dreams. There's no such thing as the perfect job. There's no such thing as the perfect corporate America dream job. I don't think dream jobs are real. I think you can have the dream life you want if you work at it though. But a job, there's no such thing. There might be a job you enjoy and that job you get a lot out of, but don't bet on that. Bet on yourself for sure.
Has there been any particular nugget that you've learned from a guest on in your discussions?
Learned so much from their experience, and I've got a lot of out of how they explain things and their way, because I think how I explain things and how I explain being an entrepreneur, how I explain being successful is different from the next person. And I learn a lot from other people's steps and their success story, because one, I may have never thought about it that way, or maybe I haven't done that step. So something that really resonated with me, there was one thing the last guy said that I thought was really interesting. So he is a CPA by day and a DJ by night, the wedding DJ, and he does corporate events too, but he would go to, where did he live at? He would go to Alabama tailgates. He loved tailgating. He's like a season ticket holder for the Alabama football team. And he loved playing music and bringing people together, having people cha-cha slide in the parking lot. And he was like, man, like, I can do this. I can play music. I can bring people together. And he was like, what really got me was I went to 6 weddings in 1 year and only one of them had a good DJ. And I never forgot he said that, because how many times have we been to 6 bakeries and only one of them was good, 6 coffee shops and only one of them was good, 6 doctors and only one of them was good? We've had enough experiences with something that we either enjoyed or were involved in, and only one time it hit. That is the aha moment for you to go and do it better. That is the aha moment for you to go and be an entrepreneur in that field.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've been to 6 clothing stores and none of them curated things in a way that met people, felt welcome and felt like, oh, these outfits are going to look good on me, they're going to work for me, make your own boutique. Okay. Like I said, if you've been in enough situations, at some point you're going to have that aha moment. It's probably crossed your mind before. You've probably, and I'm talking to whoever's listening, you've probably been in a situation at the grocery store or at the place where your dog gets groomed, whatever the case may be, or going to your favorite bookstore and saying something's just not right. And it's probably crossed your mind many times and you finally have that aha moment and you're like, I can do it better and I can do it this way. Something clicked for him after that 6 wedding. And he was like, damn, like none of these were actually that great. The vibe wasn't there. The people weren't enjoying their time as much. It wasn't about the audience. It was about the person spinning. And he said, as an entrepreneur, you have to think about your guests, your clients, your customers. You can't just think about yourself. Other people, the thing about entrepreneurship, you're putting other people on your shoulders. Yes, you're doing it because you're passionate, you love it, you want to grind and have grit, but you're doing it to make an impact in people's lives. So think about those people when you're out there creating those business plans and coming up with those ideas, and think about all the times you saw it done and you didn't think it was the right way. I think that's your aha moment. And when he said that, I really thought about it. And I said, there have been so many podcast shows I've listened to that I loved or didn't love or didn't enjoy. So many times I've read a book by Dave Ramsey or Robert Kiyosaki and things stuck with me. And I'm like, well, I agree. I understand what they're saying, but I look at money in a different way. And all of these lessons learned about money, my own experiences, being laid off from work, getting a financial advisor when I was 22 years old, all these experiences have really structured my mindset and the way I talk and feel and live in the wealth industry, the money industry. And all those things brought me to do my podcast. And that's pretty much what I'm trying to say. Like, different parts of your world eventually come together and it clicks for you and it sticks with you. But yeah, that really stuck to me when he said that on the show.
No. The combination of CPA and DJ, wouldn't necessarily see those two marrying up. But to the point that it's an opportunity to exercise who you are and bring out whatever those connections are. What does that overlap look like for you? An upcoming guest is a dentist, and in his lobby of his practice, he's got an art gallery. I stumbled across it in one of the buildings that I was in, and I'm like, I didn't even have a category for this. I'm looking forward to chatting with him and hearing his story. But that's almost as equally, in my mind, as the CPA and the DJ. Just that idea of we've all got our own interests and expertise. So originally the podcast centered around baking, right?
I was just teaching people how to monetize their talents in the baking industry. And then I realized I was talking about money management, budgeting, finance, entrepreneurship. And it shifted.
Gotcha.
So it went from a bakery business podcast to a business podcast.
Do you have any questions that you revisit on a regular basis or have over the course of life?
Always asking myself, Shelby, how can you reach the things that you want to manifest? I'm really big on manifestation. In my bathroom, I have about probably 20 or 25 sticky notes, and they're all the things that I want to like manifest. And I started doing this about 4 years ago, when I was manifesting a bunch of different things in my life. When I was 29, I said I wanted to do all these things by the time I was through 30. When I hit 31 at midnight, they all needed to be done. And I accomplished all of them. And I was really thankful and really blessed. But I one of the first thing I saw in the morning when I woke up, the first thing you're going to do is simply go in the bathroom, wash your face, brush your teeth, do whatever. I wanted to see it first thing in the morning, things that I wanted and desired, and read them out loud to start my day that way. And I do the same thing now. I have all the things on my mirror that I want to accomplish, and they're all written on yellow sticky notes. And I have the little stickers you can buy that have the orange, pink, and green circles you can take off. That you can get at like Office Depot. So I keep those in my top bathroom drawer. And when I accomplish something that's on that list that I want to manifest, I put a sticker on it. And I ask myself every day, like, Shelby, how are you going to manifest some of this stuff? How are you going to make it happen? A lot of times I don't know how I'm going to do it, but if I can do anything, I can make a way. And so I'm always thinking about that. I go in there and I have a mantra that I say in the morning and then I read it. The other thing I ask myself is, how do I envision my life once I achieve these things? I have a vision board that I made 5 or 6 years ago. And my mom told me that I need to frame it and like just not have it sitting here on my music sheet stand. So my frame came in yesterday. It's a huge poster board. My vision board has never changed. People are like, oh, do a vision board party. And I'm like, I'll come. But I already have a vision board. Like that vision on that board, everything's already set. So I'm always asking myself, Shelby, when you achieve these things, how do you envision your life being? Is it going to be more or less of what you thought it would be? And how are you going to embody those things? And I think it's super important. Put the things you want to manifest, put them out in front of you. But those are two questions I definitely ask myself on the regular, because I feel like as time has gone on, as I've gotten older, my idea of my goals and my resolutions, all those things, they're typically always in the same wheelhouse, right? It's not like, oh, I want a new car. It's not something like that. It's just like overall life goals and things that I want to accomplish for myself, like wholeheartedly. And there are some specifics, like things that I want to manifest. But yeah, I'm constantly asking myself those same two questions in the morning. And I know I love a good sticky note. I don't know, maybe I don't think people write as much anymore. I think everything is so digital. So I say every morning before I start my day, I say my mantra, I read my manifestations. I think about how can I achieve them and how I can envision life once I have them. And then I go walk the dogs, make an iced coffee. That's it.
Back to your vision board, you mentioned that it hasn't changed in these years. Let's just take an example on this. So if you had like a beach scene or something like that, is that something that over the course of these 5 years, how you interpret that particular scene may have shifted a little bit? I mean, because it may not be, okay, like a car, or maybe it's just a drawing of a Model T or something like that. And you're like, all right, 1 year it means this and the next year it means that. But I mean, because I'm thinking that you continue to grow and change and, you know, and life continues to go. But yet the vision board hasn't changed. So it's been able to maintain the potency, if you will. So how did you set it up that it would work in such a way and not need to have a reboot every year?
Some of the rhinestones have fell off. This is my vision board.
Wow. That's an impressive vision board. And so now everybody just listening, y'all are missing out. All right, I'll have to figure out how to do a screenshot, or we'll get it up on a visual someplace.
This is my favorite thing on my vision board right here. I'm going to read it to you. And it says, I had a lot of small victories, but it wasn't until I showed up as me completely that my world began to change. That's never changed for me. And I think I talked about this a lot today. Showing up for yourself is so important. If you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. When you decide to show up for you, when you decide to believe in you and support you and be your biggest advocate, that is when your blessings will come. That is when you'll start to win. But if you're not going to do it for yourself, nobody else is going to get on board with you. If I don't see you believing in yourself, having confidence in yourself, advocating for yourself, then why the hell would I do it? I think people that are successful are their biggest fans, not in an unhealthy or arrogant way, but in a way of, I got me and I know I'll do whatever it takes to make a way. I believe in me. I'm doing this for my family, for my friends, for the next person that looks like me, but I got to show up for me first. That is my favorite thing on my vision board. And that's never going to change. I'm going to always feel that way. But yeah, I curated my vision board around the things that are most important to me. I have these two giant schnauzers smiling, looking super cheerful and happy with their bow ties on. And that's because dogs bring me so much joy. That's never going to change you. And that's at the center of my vision board, because my dogs are my heart. And the older they get, they're 10 and a half and almost 10. And the older they get, the more I think about, man, like I've gotten 10 years older too. Like not just the dogs. I got the dogs when they were puppies. So if the dogs are 10, that means I'm 10 years older too. So we're all aging, but I love them to death. And they're at the heart of everything that I do in my life. And they bring me so much joy. And I know I won't have them forever, but I'll always have a place in my heart. And these are somebody else's dogs. Mind you, I got all the stuff out of magazines. But when I saw it, I thought about my two dogs and how much I love them. And I said, no matter what happens, I'm gonna always have a dog in my life. I'm always going to have a pet. And I'm going to treat them with love and kindness. That's never going to change. All these things are just, you know, it is what it is. And there's you said about a beach scene. There actually is a hammock scene. I think it's like right here, a hammock beach scene. I have that on there for my love of travel and adventure.
There you go.
Not because I want to lay in that hammock on that exact beach. I don't even know where that's at, to be honest with you. I have a love of adventure and just not being kept in one place. I like the idea that I can up and go when I want and see new things, experience new cultures. And there's so much beauty in this world. Why not go see it? So these are things that I just feel like are just there. Nothing's changed. It might not be this exact thing. And I have this car on here, not because I drive a Lamborghini, because I don't. I put that car on there when I made this 5 years ago, because I wanted to pay my car off. I didn't want to have a car note. And I really believe in like financial wellness, like I said, and saving money and investing. And once you drive your car off the lot, it depreciates. So I was like, man, I want to pay my car off. Like, it would be just such a dream to drive around for free and just deal with the maintenance. So I paid my car off last year and I was so happy. I couldn't wait to call my dad. I was like, when they mail the deed to the house, bring it with you when you come to Austin. I was like, I did it. I did it. I met my goal. I paid the car for 5 years. I'm good. I'm done. I'm going to drive it off. Like I just got it on the lot. So yeah, a lot of these things are just full circle for me and just small things in my life that I really wanted to achieve, but they're actually quite simple. It's a lot of words, a lot of pictures, because they represent who I am. But there's no right or wrong answer to the vision board. Like the vision itself is at the heart of, I want to accomplish these things in my life. I want to see them through, right? I want to pay the car off. I want to show up for myself. I want to always be a dog mom. But overall, all those things bring me joy and they keep me grounded. So looking at it gives me a breath of fresh air. It's very evergreen. I'm gonna go ahead and frame it. It has some holes in it from when it was on the wall. My mom was like, take that down, get you a frame. Yeah. Like, it's been beat up. I literally like bubble wrapped it when I moved to Austin and put it in its own box. She was like, you and this vision board. I was like, if anyone's gonna see anything come to fruition, it's me. It's a reminder, my little trophy.
That'll work. I wanted to loop back on when you were talking about belief in yourself and making yourself a priority, because there's lots of circles that say that you must serve others and put others before you. And that kind of becomes a drumbeat whereby it's forgetting to put your mask on first, and therefore you expend yourself on everyone else. If you're really selfish, then yeah, drink that deep, because you need to be calibrated. But if that's not the case, can you help? What's your thought on bringing clarity to that perspective?
That doesn't mean that you shouldn't show up for other people. It just means that you have to be the best version of yourself before you can be the best version for somebody else. So you want to be the best mom, the best dad, the best daughter, the best son, the best coworker, the best manager, the best team lead. You want to be all those things, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, because those people need you. They are counting on you. You did say you would also show up for them. But if you don't take care of your mental health, your mental well-being, your financial health, your physical health, you can't do any of that. You're going to be in debt. You're going to be in the hospital because your health is bad. You're going to either need to start going to counseling, or you're going to realize you're going to see the wrong person and they're not actually helping you because you didn't even put your ducks in a row on this end in your personal life. You can go to therapy all day if you want to. I'm really big on mental health. But you might have to pivot, and maybe you need a mental health coach. Maybe you don't need a therapist, whatever the case may be. But if you're not focusing on yourself, let's just say you're over here on this side, then all these other people, your team that you lead, your family that relies on you, your wife, your husband, your dog, all that's going to fall to the wayside because you're not good in any of these areas. You're not saving your money. You're not budgeting your money. You're not being honest with your therapist or your mental health coach, or you're seeing the wrong kind of therapist, mental health coach, and they're not helping you. And you're just staying and feeling stuck because you don't want to hurt their feelings. You're not working out. You're not eating right. You're not doing any of those things. So you're kind of just coasting. That's not showing up for yourself. You're still getting money. You're still getting paid. You're still alive. You're still putting food in your body, but you aren't putting any thought into yourself. So because you're not showing up for yourself, all these people are not only taking your energy, but you're not giving them the best version of you. And they deserve better than that. And you deserve better than that. So that's what I mean when I say show up for yourself. Bet on yourself. A lot of people take on other people, other things. I don't want to call them burdens. I would just call them abilities, because you have to be a strong, able person to put so much on you. But at the end of the day, they're breaking down. They're worn out. They're burnt out. And when somebody becomes burnt out, they're no good to themselves or to anybody around them. I think we've all hit breaking points in our lives when we were tired and things became too much, but we knew when to stop. Usually we always know when to hit the brakes, but some people don't hit the brakes, they hit the gas. So slow down, take your time, show up for yourself. And that way you can just be a better version for everybody else that's around you. I think that's what showing up really is. So hope that was helpful.
Yeah. Thank you. As you reflect back on where you are today, were there any pivotal questions, whether it was mentors asking you or any questions that you asked yourself specifically helped you get to where you are today?
I think one of the biggest questions that I've asked myself over the past 10 years, going somehow I turned 30 something, I don't know how, at least I still look like I'm in my 20s. If something or someone isn't adding value, I would definitely reassess it. And also the next question I ask myself is, does this bring peace? Like, do I feel like my nervous system goes into shock when I'm around this person or in this environment or doing this thing? Or do I feel joy and happiness and calm? So if the answers are the opposite of that, I'm going to reevaluate. If something or someone isn't bringing value to my life, I'm going to wish them well and bless them. It might take me who knows how long to figure out whether or not something or someone brings peace and value. But I constantly ask myself those questions. Does this bring peace and value to my life? Because if I'm not adding value, if I'm not living in peace, I honestly don't want it, Kenneth.
Mm. Yeah. As we start to turn the corner towards wrapping things up, were there any topics or any other points on questions that you were thinking about that we didn't get a chance to cover?
Not that I can think about. I just want everybody on who's listening, tuning in, whenever you do, ask yourself, when's the last time you betted on yourself? And I'll leave it at that.
That's a great question. Love that. All right. So where are the best places for folks to track you down and learn about the things that you're interested in?
Yeah. You want to say hi, you want to hit me up, you want to learn more about the podcast, hustling and budgeting and glowing. Definitely hit me up on any social media streaming platform, Hustle, Budget, Glow, or type in Hustle, Budget, and Glow on the YouTube channel. And if you want to learn more about the bakery, literally Grub It Up. Type in Grub It Up, LLC, GRUBITUP. That's it. That's how you get in touch with me. And I'm Shelby Morgan. I live in Austin, Texas. So if you're ever in Austin, say hi to me. I love coffee, pickleball, and lunch. So we can do all three if you ever come visit, Ken. Anybody listening, I'm never going to turn out an opportunity to hang out with somebody and have good vibes. But yeah, hit me up. If you want to email me, it's hustlebudgetglow@gmail.com.
Sweet. Shelby, thank you for bringing the energy and your full self to the conversation to be a part of the Curated Questions community. Thank you.
Always bringing the energy and the vibes.
Love it.
Ken here. Shelby was kind enough to send over a picture of her vision board, and I included it in the blog post on the website. So just go to Curated Questions podcast and then find the episode with Shelby Morgan, and you can see a picture of her vision board. And with that said, I really enjoyed Shelby's stories and insights. These are four takeaways I captured. What else did you catch? Number one, the foundation of early choice making. Shelby's parents gave her structured freedom from the age of four, offering her two or three options for daily decisions, such as clothing, breakfast, and lunch. This strategic parenting approach helped build her confidence in decision making and developed her ability to advocate for herself, Rather than dictating choices, her parents created a framework that allowed her to exercise agency while learning to articulate her preferences and reasoning. Question: how can you create structured choice opportunities in your relationships or work to help others develop confidence and decision-making skills? Number 2, the power of mandatory service to others. From second grade on, Shelby's parents required her to volunteer, whether at the library, food bank, or community events. This wasn't optional, but the specific type of service was her choice. This consistent exposure to helping others developed her empathy, work ethic, and understanding that privilege comes with responsibility to lift others up. Question: what consistent service commitment could you establish to stay connected to your community and maintain perspective on your own blessings? Number 3, the art of showing up completely as yourself. Shelby's favorite vision board quote emphasizes that real success came when she stopped trying to be someone else and fully embraced her authentic self. She believes people must become their own most prominent advocates, not in an arrogant way, but with genuine self-belief and confidence. Others won't invest in you if you don't first invest in yourself. Question: in what areas of your life are you still holding back from showing up as your complete, authentic self, and what would change if you did? Number 4. Ask yourself the fundamental financial awareness questions regularly. Shelby emphasizes that people don't ask themselves basic but crucial money questions often enough. She recommends consistently asking, number 1, what am I spending money on that I'm not using, such as subscriptions, memberships, and services? Number 2, what are my actual monthly bills and expenses? Number 3, how much do I have left to allocate towards saving and investing? And number 4, why do I want to save and invest this money? I mean, what's the purpose? The deeper principle is to use questions as tools for self-accountability and awareness. Shelby demonstrates this throughout her life, from her daily morning ritual of asking how can I manifest these goals, to her regular check-ins about whether something brings her peace and value to her life. Question: what is one essential question you could ask yourself weekly to maintain awareness and accountability in the areas of your life that matter most, whether that's finances, relationships, health, or personal growth? And just like that, you've made it to the end of another episode. To those on the other side of the speakers, thank you for being here. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and producer Ben Ford for the technical help. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, like, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures we are engaging the questioning community. So until next time, keep questioning.